Welcome to episode 16 of Indestructible, Indestructible, Latin America with Rodrigo Acuña. This podcast is a collaborative effort between myself and Alborada, an independent voice on Latin American politics, media, and culture based in the United Kingdom. I am a contributing editor of Alborada and am based in Sydney, Australia. If you like the content of this podcast, you may want to consider supporting us on Patreon. All of our patrons are now receiving a small selection of references to articles, podcasts, and books, which deal with some of the key topics discussed in each episode. Another way you can support us is by simply sharing this episode and letting your friends know about this podcast. You will find us on Spotify under the name Alborada, which is spelled A-L-B-O-R-A-D-A, and on Twitter and Facebook under the name Indestructible Podcast. On Instagram, you will find us under the title Indestructible Pod. The 28th of November this year marked the 47th anniversary of the beginning of Operation Condor, which was a coordinated operation between the intelligence organizations of the dictatorships of the Southern Cone of South America during the 1970s and 80s. The objective of the operation was to capture left-wing militants and dissidents, which the US-backed military dictatorships classified as terrorist. Operation Condor unleashed a savage form of state terrorism, which unlawfully detained and murdered tens of thousands of South Americans, often in the most brutal manner under torture. In order to obtain a better understanding of Operation Condor, I recently spoke to Rodrigo Vasquez, who is the director of the 2003 film Plan Condor, Axis of Evil. Born in Buenos Aires in 1969, in 1995, Rodrigo moved to the UK, where he established himself as a respected producer, director, and cameraman, having been a visiting mentor and tutor at the National Film and TV School in the UK since 2008. Rodrigo has made 30 investigative political documentaries on Latin America and other parts of the world for Al Jazeera English, BBC World, Channel 4, Global TV Brazil, SBS Australia, and Vice News World, among others. His work has been nominated for the Royal Television Society Awards, and he has obtained the prestigious Rory Peck Award for Features in 2003. I now leave you with Rodrigo Vasquez. Rodrigo Vasquez, thank you very much for joining us here at Indestructible Podcast. How did your journey as a filmmaker commence, and what would you consider some of your biggest hurdles and triumphs?
Well, thanks for the interview. Very happy to be here. My journey as a filmmaker started in Argentina, where I was born. And although I had family from Paraguay and Uruguay as well, I was basically brought up in Argentina. My first memory is shooting. I was in the kindergarten, I was five, and outside there was shooting. And we all took cover under the tables. This is my first memory ever. I remember the teachers shaking and screaming while the shooting was going on outside. And at the time, I didn't know what was happening. I do remember growing up seeing the paramilitaries in the street, because I lived in a middle-class area and some of the members of the military junta lived there. And their guards didn't use uniform. They were armed and they would stop the traffic whenever they wanted. I remember the silence and the violence. I started going to school in March of 1976 when the coup took place. The military junta changed the education programs and we started using one that was, I think, 25 years old. There were, you know, things that started happening that even a child like I was noticed, you know, in the school, unfortunately a Catholic school, we were forced to line up like soldiers and sing the national anthem. In a way, the education system was preparing you to obey. And coming from the previous period where, you know, revolutionary movements were trying to change the country, and there was a national popular government, you know, the change was noticeable, even for a 6-7 year old like I was. So I think that, and obviously this, you know, this memory I had completely forgotten about, and it came back to me one day in 2001 in the Gaza Strip while I was filming a school on a border with Egypt that was manned by the Israeli army. And we were filming the English lesson with some girls in the school, students. And when the shooting started, they all jumped under the tables and they started screaming. I was filming this. And as if in a film, you know, it came to me, you know, these memories came to me like bullets, you know, like with each bullet, you know, there was like an image coming of me doing exactly the same in 1975. And somehow I found there the connection, the reason why I was filming war in the first place. And obviously, probably because of these early memories of violence, I was predisposed to do filmmaking in the way that I did, which is concentrating on conflict and war, investigative filmmaking. And this all came together in 2002, the next year, when I made a film called Operation Condor. It was a time when, right after September 11th, 2001, after the attacks in New York and Washington, the military who were in charge of repression and who were participating in Condor, Operation Condor, in the 70s, felt that the Americans were basically doing exactly what they had done 30 years earlier and felt vindicated by this and ready to talk. So we seized the opportunity to have key people who participated in Operation Condor to talk for the camera. It was a very small window. It closed soon after. But thanks to that, I was able to then, you know, bring these two things together. September 11, 2001, September 11, 1973, which was the military coup in Chile. Next year is the 50th anniversary of the coup. And what it meant to all of us back then. And I would add now that today the operation is still relevant because Operation Condor was a campaign to exchange information between military dictatorships in South America that was backed by the CIA. With the participation of some intelligence services in other countries like France, the DST in France. And this operation had as an objective to hunt down, illegally detain, torture, and eliminate left-wing militants and leaders in Argentina, Chile, Paraguay, Brazil, Uruguay, Peru, Ecuador. And the extent of the operation covered covert operations in the US, France, Spain, and other countries. So at its height, Operation Condor covered 10% of the world.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was the next question that I had, which you've already answered, sort of to provide our audience with a brief summary of Operation Condor. And of course, last November was the 47th anniversary, I understand, of Operation Condor. And congratulations on your film, Plan Condor, Axis of Evil. I only recently viewed it and I thought it was an excellent work of investigative journalism. I'm interested in finding out what were there any key sort of facts that you found that were surprising about Operation Condor?
I was surprised by its mere existence back in 2002. It was not much discussed. And obviously it was given relevance to me because of the campaign to hunt down, illegally detain, torture and kill so-called terrorists right after the September 2001 attacks in Washington and the US. Although I had this idea of making the film before, when this happened, a window of opportunity opened and suddenly, you know, the story seemed really relevant to what was going on, particularly because the United States was using all the mechanisms that were used for Operation Condor. There were many intelligence services contributing to it. It was covert, it was illegal, it violated the most basic human rights. It covers, you know, a good part of the world. And I was surprised by, first, the reach of Operation Condor, and secondly, by its relevance in 2002. So that was surprising. It was surprising also the fact that a service like Interpol had links to the operation, so much so that when we screened the film for the first time in Paris, Interpol sent somebody to the screening, and he, in the Q&A after the film, raised his hand to defend the role of Interpol in the operation. I was surprised by that. I was also surprised by how vindicated the military that took part in the operation felt about the operation and about what they'd done in view of what the Americans were doing in 2002. And somebody like Manuel Contreras, the chief of the Chilean intelligence service, DINA, who was appointed to his job by the dictator Augusto Pinochet, he gave us an interview on the basis of the operation that was ongoing against so-called Islamic terrorism. So I was surprised by the relevance of the story. I was surprised by how the people who participated in the operation felt the need to hide its existence, yet vindicate its results. So that was surprising. And it was also surprising how the period in which our film had polarized society, a bit like now in a way, because, you know, you as George Bush said back then, the US president, you're either with us or against us. And this kind of fascist binary logic pervaded the 70s and, you know, came back in 2001.
In your film, you discuss the role of the United States in Operation Condor, figures like Henry Kissinger, who played a key role in the overthrow of President Salvador Allende in Chile in 1973, are discussed. Could you elaborate on Henry Kissinger's role in Operation Condor and perhaps some of the other figures from the United States that worked with the dictatorships in South America in the 1970s and 80s?
Operation Condor took place within the framework of the wider war against communism that was being waged in the West, and particularly by the United States. So Kissinger had a role as Secretary of State in the US Secretary of State in the operation during the president of Gerald Ford. He was first, he participated, funded and conceived the operation to destabilize the democratically elected president of Chile, the socialist Salvador Allende. He was handy in allowing Salvador Allende's army chief, Schneider, to be killed with CIA funds. And September 11th, 1973, and the military coup in Chile opened a new era of cooperation, of interference of the American government in South American politics, backing dictatorships that would end democracies throughout the Southern Cone. Kissinger was instrumental in allowing that to happen. The CIA, under Director William Colby, first during the Gerald Ford presidency, and then under George Bush Sr., was also involved in the operation by supplying communications equipment and coordination between the dictatorships, sanctioning what they were doing. Kissinger was very aware of what was being done. And although the operation started in 1975, by 1978, 3 years later, during the Football World Cup in Argentina, Kissinger went to Argentina, met the president and his ambassador, and Ambassador Robert Hill and William Holman, the political attaché of the embassy in Argentina, and James Blystone, the regional security officer there. He was briefed about Operation Condor and about its progress. Kissinger's only worry and his message to both the military dictatorship in Argentina and to General Pinochet in Chile was to try to do it in a way that would not create a scandal, try to repress and kill people and end the popular movement and the left-wing resistance in a covert way without creating a scandal. Hence the use of illegal detention centers. Hence, that's the reason why there were no public executions in Argentina, for example, where 30,000 people disappeared, because they didn't want to be condemned by the Vatican. They didn't want to create a scandal. So the operation was covert and you know, covertly also, the CIA was taking part in it through people like Lloyd Gracie, who was the American Army attaché, who was assigned to Battalion 601 in Argentina, which was, you know, in charge of a lot of the repression and the killing. This is confirmed by former CIA agent Philip Agee, and you know, he also revealed, Agee revealed that the assassination of Carlos Prats, former member of the government, the Chilean government in Argentina, was ordered by the CIA station chief Gardner Hathaway. So the role of the CIA and the American government in cooperating to track down, torture and kill dissidents is real. And declassified CIA declassified documents proved it. There's lots of books now written about it. The most important one is John Dinghy's book about Operation Condor. And I think, you know, it was part of the strategy to stop the influence of communism. That was the excuse. And definitely it involved all these people, including, you know, CIA agent Robert Scherer, who actually went to the concentration camps, talked to the torturers, and filed his reports about everything that was happening there.
Wow. Two of the most prominent figures assassinated by Operation Condor, during Operation Condor, included the Chilean, as you said, he was actually a member of the Allende government. He was also the head of the Chilean Armed Forces, General Prats, and Orlando Letelier, who was the foreign minister during Allende's government, and was murdered on the streets of Washington, I think, in 1976. Now, could you elaborate a little bit, just a little bit, on these two murders? And I'm interested in knowing, were the killers ever apprehended and brought to justice?
The operation to kill the Chilean general, Carlos Prats, took place in Buenos Aires, when he was in exile after the coup in Chile. And the operation also killed his wife. It was a car bomb. And the action was coordinated between the Chilean Secret Service, Intelligence Service, by orders of Manuel Contreras, its chief, the Argentinian police, army, and intelligence service there, and DINA agents from the U.S. citizen called Michael Townley, and others who were stationed in Buenos Aires. Of all of these people, the only one who was tried for this assassination was Manuel Contreras in Chile. The same thing applies to Orlando Letelier, in the former Minister of Foreign Affairs, who was murdered in DuPont Circle in Washington. Also, it was a car bomb. Together with him, his secretary, Ronnie Moffitt, was assassinated. The fact that the operation took place in Washington worried the US government at the time, and it became clear that it was getting out of hand. But so out of hand it got that the person who succeeded Colby in the CIA, George Bush Sr., by 1978, told former New York Mayor Edward Koch that he was in the list, in the hit list, in the Condor hit list, because he had banned the sale of weapons to Chile. So Condor also began to target not only Chileans in the US, also US citizens and politicians. And the paradox here is that the CIA was part of the operation. That's, and when it was headed by George Bush Sr., it came to his attention that Edward Koch, former New York mayor, was on the list, congressman, and then he told him that he had to take care of himself. So you can see that, you know, at this point, Operation Condor was massive, tracking down and killing people all over the world, or the Western world. And so the plots really were far reaching in their scope, and they became more and more daring until, you know, in 1982, the Argentinian military dictatorship decided to wage war in the Malvinas. And after it lost power. And that was the formal end of Operation Condor.
After the military dictatorships stepped down in the 1980s and 1990s in the southern cone of South America, the process of bringing major human rights violators to justice differed throughout the region. In Chile, for example, General Augusto Pinochet was never brought to justice, while in Argentina, General Jorge Rafael Videla died in prison. Why do you think the process of justice differed so much between these two countries?
I think for different reasons. Although the Chilean democracy was more stable and older than the Argentinian democracy, the dictatorship lasted for way longer. And you know, the Pinochet constitution is the one that is still applicable today in Chile. And that constitution conditioned completely how democracy works. And one of the conditions was not to rock the boat too much. In 1999, when Pinochet was detained here in London, I went to film all of that. It was at the request of a Spanish judge. It wasn't a Chilean judge who requested Pinochet to be detained. And when he was taken back to Chile, obviously, you know, he died without facing trial, because I think Chilean democracy to date is still conditioned by the dictatorship and that constitution. In Argentina, the fact that there was a war that was lost by the same military who who had persecuted, tortured, and killed 30,000 people, in a way, what the war produced was a loss of the image and real power, loss of real power of the military. And in a way, we had a process that was different in this, although we were conditioned in how much we could prosecute these people. And in 1985, there were trials against the commanders in chief, but not against the thousands of other military agents who were involved in the operation. And then there was, you know, these people were found to be guilty, like Videla, but then they were pardoned by decree in the 90s. And in 2002 and 3, a national popular government revived the agenda, the human rights agenda, after the crash of the economy in 2001, that again questioned the roots of the system itself. And, you know, the human rights movement in Argentina was very strong throughout the 80s and the 90s. And in the 21st century, everything that my generation, the children of those who were killed, fought for in the 21st century, this became state policy, and the state embraced the trials against human rights abusers, all the human rights abusers. This is causing tension to date. It's not a done deal, but yes, there were hundreds of people who were sent to jail. And in Chile, we still have to see this transition to a more democratic system, first by overhauling this old right-wing constitution that the Chileans still have. There was a referendum to approve a new one, which would have been one of the most progressive constitutions in the world. Sadly, campaigns against it, were successful and it was voted down. But I think it's the constitution itself and the legacy of a much longer dictatorship in Chile that did not allow most of these people to be brought to trial. Although I did film with Juan Guzmán, the Chilean judge, when he was investigating the Caravan of Death, one of the operations that Pinochet ordered against opponents. And there were people called to give evidence. And he was also in charge of the Pinochet case. But I think that because the lack of independence of the judicial system in Chile did not make it possible for this to, you know, come to its conclusion, which is, you know, to persecute everybody. And, you know, you can still see today that the judiciary in Chile, and not only in Chile, in Argentina and most of South America, has a lot of problems with the issue of independence.
In this interview, we have, of course, focused on your 2003 film, Plan Condor, Axis of Evil. You have, of course, made many films and documentaries on Latin America and other parts of the world. I'm just interested in knowing what are you currently working on? Is there anything we should be looking forward to in the future?
I'm working on a few films. One about three members of the former FARC guerrilla movement in Colombia who demobilized in 2016. And I followed three of them through the years to see, you know, how they, you know, what happened to them. So it's a film about the peace process in Colombia. I'm about to start a film about lawfare in South America. That's why I was talking about the independence of the judiciary system. It's a way of intervening democracy that is not a military coup, but it's as damaging. Lawfare empowered people like Jair Bolsonaro in Brazil to become president, with huge consequences for the Brazilian democracy, but also for the Amazon rainforest. People were killed because of Bolsonaro being in power. So I think it's the intervention in our democracies is still ongoing. We still have to perfect it. We're not alone in that. You know, I think the US A, also has a huge problem with his democratic system, and I'm very interested in this issue.
Rodrigo Vázquez, filmmaker, it has been an absolute pleasure talking to you here at Alboradas Indestructible podcast.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. As always, I would like to thank Alborada for this opportunity to host Indestructible, Indestructible. Once again, I would encourage our listeners to support this podcast on Patreon, which you can do for as little as the price of one cup of coffee a month. My sincere thanks, as always, goes to Alborada's founder and co-editor, Pablo Navarrete, who produces this podcast. If you have any comments on this episode, please write to us on our email, which you will find on Alborada's website. We'll be back soon with episode 17, but until then, goodbye and stay safe.